Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Messy Bun Mayhem, the podcast series where we discuss things lean, mean, green, seen, and unseen on a quest for old and new knowledge and truth. I'm your host, Andy Salamini, and today I'm here joined by high school history teacher Ben Gill, where we're going to be discussing some aspects of history and world travel. How are you today?
Very good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. So the first question I wanted to ask you is, how long have you been teaching history?
Overall, I think 16 years at Western Wayne, 15. So, yeah, about 15 years.
And why did you choose to become a history teacher?
Initially, I wasn't going to go into teaching. Initially, I was going to go into the military. Mm-hmm. But towards the end, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, is that really the way I want to go? My mother was a history teacher, so that kind of steered me towards that. I've always kind of enjoyed history and reading and things like that. So it just kind of seemed natural. And a bunch of my friends and I went to school together. So We ended up going together, and I stuck it out, and we all ended up being teachers. So.
And did you do well in history, like when you went to school?
I was a solid B student. I wasn't anything out of control. I wasn't honor society or anything like that. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy the writing. You know, I like reading. I don't like writing, though. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy lectures, and I enjoyed talking and discussing.
And what was your favorite thing that you learned in history as a student?
In like college or just in general?
Just in general.
I probably, as a young student, I always enjoyed, as most of us do, the wars, like talking about World War II and things like that. But as time went on, I kind of enjoyed more the aspect of seeing how things kind of piece together over time, like this causes that and that causes this, and how everything's, no matter how small, is kind of important in how history grows and changes over time.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously you teach world history. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference of like world history over U.S. history?
I tend to lean more towards world history because I look at it like American history is part of world history. Mm-hmm. So I get that anyway. But I like world history just because it gets you to see stuff that you're not normally familiar with.
So then you would think that world history isn't more important than U.S. history. They kind of like go together.
Yeah, I think they go together. I don't think there, with history, I don't think there's anything like you can put an emphasis on any one over another as being important. Obviously, everybody has an affinity for their own history, but I like looking at it in bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the most relevant example of the phrase "history repeats itself"?
Mm. Just the constant, never-ending conflict that we see, and it's always for the same reasons. You know, it could be one of any five or six different reasons: money, religion, you know, power. But yeah, you can't look at history and not see wars or conflicts starting for any other reason except those things. But yet we keep saying you're doomed to repeat it. Then we need to make a change somewhere. Then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on to some questions about traveling. I know that you've traveled quite a bit around the world. What do you think is the most exciting thing overall about traveling?
Just being plucked out of your comfort zone and dumped into something that you're completely unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see. Like, every morning you wake up and you go to work and you see the same scene over and over again. And then when you go overseas, you know, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's like waking up in a dream.
You know? I'm sure. What was the first country that you traveled to outside the U.S.?
First country I traveled to on my own outside of the U.S. Was Japan.
And how old were you?
20.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like to be a stranger in a strange land?
It was kind of like being an animal at the zoo.
Uh-huh.
In Japan, especially because they're a very homogenous population. You know, all of a sudden you see a 6-foot blonde, you know, blue-eyed guy, and all of a sudden it becomes, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to take their picture and talk to you and try out their English and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was neat. It was a little hard at first because I'm not exactly a go out and interact with everybody I see kind of person. I don't want to be the center of attention. And all of a sudden I was like holding kids like babies, having my picture taken with them.
Oh.
It was kind of wild.
How many countries have you traveled to?
I was thinking about this the other day. Somebody asked me. I think I was somewhere around 15.
Wow. And which one would you say is your favorite that you visited?
I like Vietnam and South Africa. Those are probably two of my favorites. But yeah, they're probably up there. I liked Belize too. That was neat.
What do you like so much about them?
Just the differences in what is normal. You know, you go to Vietnam thinking like, okay, we had a war over this country or in this country, and now, you know, everybody's super hospitable and they're, come on in and try this and do this and let me take you here and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Are there any countries that you visited that you didn't like?
I don't know if I didn't like it. India was really tough, mostly because of the poverty. But I would go back, but it was really hard to be there. The pollution was very tough. I got a horrible, like almost like a chest cold, but I found out later it wasn't a cold at all. It was just the pollution was so bad there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't deal with it. So yeah, India was tough for me. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's any place that I have been that I wouldn't go back.
That's good. What would you say is the scariest situation you've been in while traveling abroad?
There was a situation in Kenya where we were stopped by a, we had been stopped a couple of times. They have a an immigration problem on their northern border from Somalia, and they have armed police officers all along the road. And we got stopped when we were driving along, and each time we got stopped, they just asked for our passport, and we'd show them the passport, they'd let us go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one guy demanded a bribe, and he had a machine gun. So we're sitting there, and he's getting angry. Our driver was talking to him in Swahili, and we didn't know what was being said. And the driver eventually turned around and said, we need to pay this guy, otherwise we're going to be in some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble that he meant was, like, he wasn't going to arrest us. He was going to shoot us. So that was probably the scariest moment. But, I mean, it ended up being a non-event in the end. We paid the guy, like, $50. So it wasn't...
Is that, like, more over there?
Yeah, it was a pretty... significant sum for him. I'm guessing he probably made $50 a week.
Oh.
So.
What would you say is the most interesting custom or idea that you've like learned from another country?
Probably with the Japanese, the idea of honor, essentially, because everything has a place in Japanese society and everything is very ritualized. Not necessarily with the young kids, but as you get older, things you can see how they pan everything out, and everything has got its place, and everything is done for a specific reason, and you just treat people with respect because that's what you're supposed to do. It's not like, oh, I'm going to do this because I have to. It's because that's another person, and I want to treat them that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're going to get anything out of it. So.
It's a lot different than over here, I'd say.
Yeah, it's the Japanese have a kind of an idea of. Like a collective good. Like if we take care of everybody else, like all of our countrymen, then the country will be better. Whereas in the United States, we're more, how can I make myself better, you know, as opposed to, I'm not worried about so much these people over here. If I make myself better and they're working on making themselves better, then we'll all be better.
Right.
So.
Do you speak any languages besides English?
A little bit of a couple different languages, but nothing fluent or conversational. I took Spanish in high school and college. I learned enough, like hello, thank yous, to get by in a couple other languages. But yeah, nothing, nothing fluent.
What countries haven't you visited that you'd still like to?
Like to get to mainland Europe. I've only ever been to England and Wales. I definitely want to get to Switzerland. I want to get to Ireland just because of my family, my ancestors. Probably around the Mediterranean. Yeah, I'd like to get to Europe.
Do you have any future traveling plans?
Definitely. Just my fiance and I have talked about going to Europe and things like that, but nothing immediate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like very big into food,
mm-hmm.
and I know there's, you know, every culture has their own food and mm-hmm. the way that they cook, and it's very interesting. So what do you think is the best dish that you've had from traveling?
Overseas? there's so many. I love Indian food. I love Indian food just because it reminds me of like a fall day. You get like a big soup, but it's not a soup, it's like a curry, so it's like a stew. And you throw that on rice and you get bread and you just kind of mop it all up and eat it. There's so many flavors and so many spices.
Mm-hmm.
Japan, obviously, I love seafood and sushi. And Brazil. Brazil has their own spin on it, but they have... you know, steak. So I had one of the biggest filet mignons I've ever had in my life in Brazil, and it was dirt cheap, and I could have eaten that like every day till the day I died, which would have been like 3 weeks later because of all the cholesterol. But It was super tasty.
Do they have American food in other countries?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember I was in Beijing, and we stopped at a Pizza Hut. You know, we were in a mall, walking around this big mall, and I just happened to catch a Pizza Hut. And I'm like, hey, let's go get some pizza. And another one, we were in Malaysia. There was a Mississippi barbecue house in the middle of Kuala Lumpur. We're like walking along, like, this can't be real.
Yeah, that's weird.
And we went down, and they had pretty good barbecue. I mean, it was their own little take on it, but it was pretty close.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest difference between America and other countries, positively speaking?
I think other countries, I kind of like an American sometimes to growing up wealthy, and we don't really know. A lot of people in the U.S., not all, but a lot of people in the U.S. don't know how bad it can get.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, when I was in India or China, I saw people who were like days from death. You know, like they didn't know it, but they weren't far off. And that was their life.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people, a lot of times in the U.S., we have so much. Even for some of the poorest of the poor, there's so many systems that we have that catch many of them. You know, like, oh, well, here's food, here's medicine, and other places, it's just, that doesn't exist. So you get to a point and then you die, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And from, like, and negatively speaking, like, what do you think other countries kind of are better at than we are?
I think some other countries tend to have maybe a better understanding of where they're at. You know, the United States has been number one for so long that we don't understand that we need to keep improving, whereas other countries are really always striving. Like, you look at places like India, and people are like, well, how are they growing? It's because they understand where they came from, and they're really working hard to improve themselves.
Right.
Even China, you know, even though they're a communist country, they're trying to become leaders in the world. They want to be the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
You know, the U.S. is the U.S., and everybody else is kind of striving, like, well, we'd like to be that, too. So they're pushing, and I think in the U.S. we've kind of sat back on our laurels a little bit, like, hey, we were super cool. Yeah, we are, and we have a great society here, but we need to keep pushing that, you know? We need to keep working at it.
Yeah, I agree. Have you made any friends from other countries?
Oh, I have tons of friends. Australia, England, Germany, yeah, all over the place.
And do you still talk to them?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. So what do you think we as Americans can learn from, like, other cultures and other countries?
I think maybe a little bit more of the idea of community. I think you look back at, like, the 1950s and you hear about people living in neighborhoods and things like that, and being the neighborhood being kind of the focal point of your social life, and now today it's more of this virtual, you know, neighborhood where your friends are all over the place. You might have dozens of them, but it's not really an interaction. You don't really hang out together.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was a kid, I remember just going around hanging out with people, you know. And now it seems like people are more interested in, I need alone time. I need to be antisocial, not necessarily in a bad way, just I don't need the society. I have it all here.
Right.
But it's not that physical thing. And humans are physical animals. And in other countries around the world, it's nice to see, like, even the poorest of the poor always come together to help each other, as opposed to, like, well, I'm going to donate to your whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, I'm going to come over and clean your clothes for you because you're sick, or I'm going to go make your dinner for you because you can't, or your family members are out and about or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of that. I think we could probably get back to that some. Not necessarily abandoning technology, but maybe making it less ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm. So for first-time travelers, like, if I were to plan a trip to go to another country, what do you think is, like, a good country to kind of start out on?
Yeah, people have asked me this before. One of the first things I tell them to do is just travel around the U.S. You know, we've got this big, diverse country, and if you go from here in Pennsylvania to Arizona, you know, or New Mexico, or, you know, up in Idaho or something like that, you're going to see a completely different side of the country. And it just kind of gets your feet wet for the idea of what mm-hmm. you have to do to make all the transitions, like the flights or the trains or cars and stuff. But if you're dead set on getting out of the country, I would say just go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Europe's basically very similar to America with a little bit deeper of a history.
So, like, what would you say are, like, essential traveling tips?
Hmm. don't announce it. Americans are very famous for being Americans loudly and proudly all over the place. I'm sure I stand out in a crowd as an American just because of the way I look, but I don't go up to every single person and
mock I'm American.
Them. Yeah, so it's almost like mocking them. Like you, Americans speak loudly and slowly in their native tongue to try to get people who don't speak English to understand them. So, like if I was in China walking up, "Do you have soda?"
Oh, that's
like they're not going to understand you no matter how slowly or loudly you say it.
I'd get offended.
Yeah, and it is offensive to a lot of people overseas. Some people just kind of chuckle it off, thinking like, "Oh, here's an American." But I do. If I'm going to go ask somebody for something, I try to learn the phrase that I need to learn to ask them in their language, even if it's horrible, because they don't expect you to learn Chinese overnight.
Yeah.
But at least you're trying. The French are famous for this. If you go up to ask directions in France and you don't say hello, if you don't greet the person first, like, hey, if you just walked up, "Hey, where's the Louvre?" They'd be like, but if you said hello and tried to have a conversation with them, if you tried French, that's great. They understand that not everybody's going to speak French. "Hi, I'm sorry, I don't speak French. Could you help me find?"
Because I think they learn English. Like, mm-hmm. They're big into learning English there.
Most countries around the world, especially more modern, developed countries, English is pretty much almost forced upon on the youth.
I wish other languages were more like incorporated mm-hmm. into
yeah.
American society.
It's tough for the U.S. because English is the one that has been chosen. So it's like, well, we could all learn German, but not many people are going to be speaking German in the next 50 years. Spanish is a good one because we have such a close tie with Mexico and South America, so that's a good one to learn and pick up. You know, if you want to get into politics, you look at the places around the world where the United States has interests. So you look at the Middle East, so learn Arabic, learn Farsi, learn Mandarin Chinese, you know, things like that.
I think it would be easier to learn foreign languages if we started younger.
Absolutely.
Because then it's more like, you know, as you grow up and you still incorporate that into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Or like now, I'm never taking Spanish classes, but usually I eat lunch in Mrs. Sandro's room mm-hmm. and she has a class during that time. And I find that I've picked up more
right.
on that. But like it's so hard to understand. And I feel like if I had taken it earlier, that it would be easier to understand.
Right. And you're learning two languages at the same time. So by the time you're a high school kid, you've learned English and you know like many of the rules and stuff like that. So then you try to take those rules and apply them to another language, which mm-hmm. doesn't work, you know.
Continuing with traveling, what are like essentials that you bring with you everywhere that you always have to have?
I'm a light traveler, so I don't have a ton. If I'm leaving the country, the only thing I'm going to really take with me is change of clothes and my passport and some money. Like credit cards or whatever, just because credit cards are pretty much taken everywhere, but cash is always king. Depending on where I'm at, you know, if you know you're not going to have access to clean water, you might take some bottled water, it might take some like purification tablets or something like that. But if you're just going on a vacation to like Europe, you know, get by with as little as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take some clothes, take your toiletries, take your passport and some money. Probably a camera or something,
mm-hmm.
but
and,
that's about it.
I don't really know what the process is, but how do you convert currency?
Oh, it's super easy. You can do it if you take your ATM card, and it's like a Visa or a MasterCard ATM card. As soon as you go to an ATM, it'll automatically do it for you.
Oh, really?
And it'll take out. It takes a little percentage off because they're doing a fee, like a service for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take in pretty much every international airport. They have money exchange booths, so you can bring U.S. cash, and you go to France, and you're like, "Hey, I need euros." So you'll give them $100 worth of American cash, and they'll give you the equivalent in euros, just minus a fee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty simple.
Do you have like a favorite like kind of architectural work from another country?
Well, the Great Wall of China was pretty hard to beat. That one was great. Let's see, what else? Oh, the Lacerda elevator in Brazil was pretty neat. Love, this is why I want to get to Europe so bad. I want to see the castles. I want to see these old buildings that they built. And the one thing that I was supposed to go see that I didn't get was the pyramids. And that was because back in 2000, terrorism was really starting to take an upswing. And they attacked a U.S. warship in Yemen, and they kind of changed our course. They said, well, we're not going to go up there now because yep. there's 700 American college students on this ship, so we're not going to go that direction.
Are there any countries that Americans aren't allowed to visit?
There's a few you have a real tough time getting into. Cuba was for a while. Now they're a little bit more open. North Korea, Iran, those two they're not really well receiving of Americans. I have heard of Americans getting into North Korea, but if you do anything wrong, you're going to stay there for a while.
Yeah, I'd be terrified to go there. I don't know why anybody would want to go there.
Yeah, I think it's mostly just curiosity. Like, we hear all these stories about how insane it is and how crazy things are there. Are they real? And some of the people that have come back have said, yeah, it's pretty accurate what you're hearing. Mm-hmm. There was that young guy who went a couple of years ago, Otto Wambergier, I can't remember his last name, but he got picked up for, I think it was some kind of vandalism, like he took a poster off a wall, like in a hotel, and they nailed him for that, and they kept him there for a while. And he was abused badly. Like, he died when he got back just from the abuse.
Oh, my God.
So you really, if you're going to go there, I would go with, like, some type of North Korean sponsor so that you're with them and they tell you what to do. Don't just go there.
I would never. I'd be terrified of it.
That was a tough one.
So if you had to live in another country, where would it be?
Switzerland, probably. Eat a lot of chocolate, sit up in the mountains. I think I could do that. Yeah, probably Switzerland. Maybe Canada. I don't like the tropics that much. I don't like the heat. I spent way too much time in 90-plus degree temperature with humidity. I'm like, no, I'll take the winter cold and the snow.
Is Switzerland a wealthy country?
Yeah, they are very wealthy. They're very highly taxed. And that can fight against you a little bit. But they are really well-developed, high technology, kind of have a good eye on the future and trying to build their society up really strong.
So would you definitely recommend that people travel more?
Yeah, that's one of the things I tell students as that year between your senior year and freshman year of college. I say, maybe take a trip somewhere. It doesn't have to be anything big. You know, hop on a plane, go to Norway. Hop on a plane, go to Mexico. Go to Canada. Take a trip around the U.S. if you can't afford that.
That's what I'd like to do. Yeah. I'd like to take a road trip, cross-country and go everywhere.
I just saw something on it was Facebook or something the other day of an Amtrak train trip that goes across the country for, $230 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can get on in New York or wherever the station is and go all the way to Los Angeles or San Francisco for $200, and you're going through the mountains, through the plains. You get to look at, you get to stop and get off for a little while. So that might be something interesting to do.
Yeah, I would look into something like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so my last question for you is if overall you would recommend pursuing a career in either teaching world history or just kind of world relations in general.
Yeah, I would definitely. If I always tell people when it comes to your job, if it's something that interests you, and you're good at it, and you can monetize it. Those are your big three. So if it's something that holds your interest, that you're passionate about, something that you can do on a daily basis and that you can actually put your heart and soul into, and then something that you can live off of, because everybody's like, well, I want to do this. How are you going to make money off of it? I mean, I know it's a passion, but maybe that's more of a hobby passion. Because I'm never going to say to somebody, don't do that, but you also have to live. Mm-hmm. So unless you're independently wealthy, you got to find something that you really want to do, that you can do well, and that can be done for compensation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is something you can do. There's always going to be a need for teachers of some type, and even if it's not teaching, you can get into the historical side of things for museum curators or researchers and things like that. So I mean, there's always stuff out there to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. For everyone listening in, thanks for tuning in, and until next time, have a great day.